We get things rolling by hopping on board the G&M Family Market phone line and saying hello to, national columnist for NBC Sports, the author of several books, including The Secret of Golf and The Soul of Baseball. He's a former National Sports Writer of the Year, Joe Posnanski. Welcome back to Downtown and a Happy New Year to you.
Happy New Year to you as well.
You have done a wonderful job breaking down some of the candidates for the Baseball Hall of Fame that will be announced here in a couple of weeks. So let's start with that, and let's start with those people who might be on the outside looking in. Who do you think will get the Hall of Fame snub this year?
Well, I don't. It's going to be very, very close for a couple of people. I mean, I don't know if you would call it a snub, but I think Trevor Hoffman is a guy that's going to be very, very close, and I'm not sure he's going to quite make it in this year. It's going to be very interesting to see a couple of newcomers on the ballot, see how, Ivan Rodriguez does. I think there's a very good chance he will get elected, but he's, right on the borderline as well. Somebody who is definitely going to get snubbed, who is obviously a big fan in your neck of the woods, is Manny Ramirez, and it's his first year on the ballot. It's going to be very interesting to see where he ends up, but he's not going to get anywhere near election this year, and I think it's going to be very difficult. It's going to be a real uphill climb for him.
You mentioned Trevor Hoffman, and I loved your analysis of closers, that you compared them to kickers in the National Football League, and I thought that was a pretty apt comparison.
Well, it's just a different position, and that's not to say that the best closers shouldn't be in the Hall of Fame. I think they should, but the question is how many of the best closers? And I think, it is similar to kickers in that they are brought in. What they do is very important, but it's certainly a different job than really the rest of it. And it's very different to be a closer than a starter. And Trevor Hoffman was a great player and saved more than 600 games. There's another reliever on this year's ballot, Billy Wagner, who I think was probably every bit as good in a different way. But it's really tough in the Hall of Fame. Standards are very, very difficult in all circumstances. You throw in the obvious, the PED thing, that makes it even tougher. Then you throw in positions like designated hitter or reliever, closer. These are tricky questions.
We had Steve Buckley from the Boston Herald on a couple of weeks ago, and he was talking about the fact that he has decided since Bud Selig is going in the Hall of Fame that he now has to view players of the PED era in a different light. Do you believe that other writers might follow suit?
I do. I do think that it's going to happen. I think what's never been realistic is that you were going to be able to keep out PED players. I mean, the era was so, there was no testing. There was no testing. There was no policing at all. Frankly, I mean, I think it was encouraged by various teams. It made you a better player. There was certainly the monetary incentive was enormous. So I think a lot of players used, and we don't know who it was that did it, did not. Obviously, there are some very, very public cases of people that we feel definitely used. A couple of those have even admitted using. Trying to separate who did and who didn't in an era where there was no testing is very, very difficult. And I think, Bud Selig is obviously him going in as the commissioner over this time period. But I thought a couple of years ago when they put in three managers into the Hall of Fame, including Tony La Russa, who managed, the Jose Canseco, Mark McGwire A's that we have now found clearly were steroid using. I just think it's just illogical to try to separate these people, scapegoat these people, while treating other people differently. It was part of the game. It's a sad part of the game, and I think now there's testing, and that's why guys like Manny Ramirez, I think, are going to get treated differently because he tested positive. It's a very clear, crossing of the line, but it's going to be very, very difficult to try to figure out, in the 1990s who used, who didn't use. And so I think Steve, his point of view is going to become certainly more common as we go.
Do you think, Joe, that you prefer a more of an exclusive Hall of Fame or more inclusive?
I'm a big Hall of Fame guy. A lot of people disagree with that. I love the Hall of Fame being very inclusive. I love the Hall of Fame being, players who were great for short periods of time, for instance. you know, there's a sense of the Hall of Fame that there's really a combination, and you need to be great for a long enough time to put up very impressive career numbers, 300 wins or 3,000 hits or that kind of thing. But to me, a player who was great for 5, 6, 7 years, to me, should be very seriously considered for the Hall of Fame. And, you know, that's a bit of a minority opinion. I think more people seem to want a very, very exclusive Hall of Fame, which I'm fine with, too, if that's what we decide to do. But then you have to, if you're going to be really exclusive, then there are a lot of people in the Hall of Fame that don't belong already, and you don't want to have a Hall of Fame that's very inconsistent. So I think the standards of the Hall of Fame are pretty clear based on who's in it, and I tend to vote based on who's actually in the Hall of Fame.
We're talking with Joe Posnanski of NBC Sports here on Downtown. And, well, you've done some of the heavy lifting for those who would like perhaps a more exclusive Hall of Fame. You wrote about it a few years ago and then followed up recently with the new Willie Mays Hall of Fame. Can you talk about some of the criteria for the Willie Mays Hall of Fame and what that would look like?
Well, what I'm trying to do, it's an experiment, and it's something that I'm trying to do over several days over at my blog at joeposnanski.com. And I'm just trying to get, what would a very, very, very exclusive Hall of Fame be? What would it look like? How many people would be in it? Who would be excluded that would make everybody angry? Because I think there's a sense out there for most people that the Hall of Fame is very exclusive. Like, there is this, every time you talk to anybody, they'll say, oh, you know, that guy's not as good as Willie Mays. Well, nobody was as good as Willie Mays. So what would a very, very exclusive Hall of Fame look like? Who would you leave in? Who would you take out? It's just kind of a little fun game that I'm playing over at my blog.
You've written about the Cleveland Browns, too, and I was saying last week that poor Cleveland, they're so bad, they can't even do bad perfectly and go 0-16. You had some mixed feelings about the Browns getting that win.
Well, it's not the mixed. I grew up in Cleveland, and I'm a Browns fan, and I didn't have mixed feelings so much about the win as what they needed to have happen for them to win. I mean, they needed San Diego to just basically lay a giant egg, and they still needed the Chargers to miss two game-tying field goals at the end, and you know, they just needed all of this luck, and it was kind of, they didn't play well, and you know, they were dismal this year. I mean, it wasn't just the record; they found ways to lose that were, you know, the final game of the year. They basically had the game won about 10 different times and kept finding ways to lose. That's going to be a real challenge for Hugh Jackson. Not only getting talent, they're obviously very devoid of talent, and they'll have a couple of very high first round picks to try to fix that a little bit next year, but right now, that's an organization just in the dumps. I mean, nobody really has any sense of what it's like to win, and I think it's gonna take some real effort to turn that thing around.
Joe, what can you tell us about the book you're working on about Harry Houdini?
Yeah, that's a wild one, right? They just go right from the Browns to Harry Houdini. Although that's sort of what the Browns are trying to do, I guess, pull that off. I had this idea a few years ago, and it sort of actually began with Babe Ruth, where I had this thought about writing about wonder, this idea of wonder and awe that people used to feel, certainly felt for Babe Ruth. And you know, I think we all know that if Babe Ruth was playing in today's world, it'd be very different. He'd have a Twitter account, and nobody would like him. He would say stupid things. All of his various escapades that were sort of kept quiet would all be public. I mean, he would be, you know, he'd be some version of Johnny Manziel meets, you know, whoever. So I wanted to kind of, I had this idea about wonder and what we've lost. And Babe Ruth didn't seem exactly the right guy to write it about. And I started thinking about Harry Houdini. And I've always been a little bit of a Magic fan, and I knew a little bit about Houdini. So I wanted to write about Houdini in today's world, and it's been an incredible ride. It's the first book I've written where I knew nothing coming in. I knew nobody. I didn't know anybody in the Magic community. I'd never, you know, been around magicians. I'd never been around anybody who were collectors or Magic people in general. And this last year, I've basically immersed myself in that world a little bit, and it's just been fantastic. It's been so much fun. I've met so many cool people who will be a big part of the book and a big, you know, characters in the book. And it's really, really fun. It's really this idea of people trying to do what Houdini did, not so much the escape part of it, although that's obviously, you know, the story of his life is a big, big part of his book. But this idea of trying to still create like this childlike wonder in people in a much more cynical time that we're in. And I think it's going to be a lot of fun.
Well, that sounds great. I can't wait to read it. We'll have to get you back on when it comes out. I have to think, Joe, of all the things you've written in the last couple of years, has anything gotten as much feedback and as many comments from people about the story of you taking your daughter to see Hamilton?
Yeah, that was something. That was something. I took her to see Hamilton last May and wrote about it. And you know, it was at a particularly, you know, a little bit of a trying time between, you know, with my daughter. She was diagnosed with Crohn's disease, and you know, we were kind of going through some things, and she loved and still to this day loves Hamilton, the Broadway show. And I basically broke the bank and got tickets for it and took her to see it. And it was magical. It was just a magical night. And I wrote about it and really kind of just wrote it because I write about everything. I mean, I wasn't expecting it to touch as many people as it did. But I mean, you know, it just got, I mean, literally millions of people read it and so many of them responded and reached out to me and talked about their own experiences with their daughters. Father daughters seem to be a very big part of it. Obviously, a lot of people love Lin-Manuel Miranda, who was kind enough to actually retweet the story and read it and talk about how much he loved it. So it was very, very special. And I don't know, you know, I've done other things that have gotten you know, tremendous response, but I don't think I've ever gotten anything as pure is that one, because it was on my blog. I mean, there was nothing. I wasn't trying to promote it or get it out there or anything like that. People just found it, and that was really cool.
And I love the follow up that you did recently, talking about the fact that you took just one picture on that very special night.
Yeah. You know, it was interesting. It was the end of the year, and I, you know, in the first version of the story, I hinted around the idea that you know, that my daughter and I were going through, you know, these health issues. I didn't talk about it at all. And I kind of felt like, you know, if I'm going to tell that story, I always try to be as honest as I can. I mean, I think that's the one thing that I can do is be really honest. And I thought, you know, I've never really told the story of why it was so special for me beyond the opportunity to take your daughter to see, like, sort of to live her dream a little bit. And so I wanted to write about that, and I was actually, I didn't know how to do it, and I literally was going back to my pictures, and I saw the one picture I took, and I thought that's how I tell the story, is this one picture. I had promised no pictures, but she begged me. She's like, no, you have to take one, and I took this one picture, and it's kind of out of focus, but it's beautiful. It's my favorite picture I've ever taken, and so I wanted to write a little bit about that.
Well, it's an absolutely beautiful story. Is there a bigger Lin-Manuel Miranda fan now than Elizabeth?
No. And in fact, when Lin has reached out to me via Twitter and so on, he started calling her Eliza, which is the character of Eliza Schuyler, is Alexander Hamilton's wife,
right?
Which is what she wants to be known by. And the first time that Lin reached out to us, you know, father and daughter, and the whole family, she just broke out in tears. I mean, she was just so happy, and it was such a, you know, it was a tough time in so many ways, and we're still fighting things, and to have that happen at that moment was just, I have tried to put it into words, but it's really hard to put into words how special it was.
Well, I don't think anybody could put it into words any better than you did, Joe. It's a wonderful piece. We're big fans of your work here. Always great talking with you. Thanks, Joe, for making time for us this afternoon. A happy new year to you, and we look forward to talking with you again down the road.
That sounds great. Thank you.
That's Joe Posnanski, NBC Sports.